Taste of Country Nights with Evan Paul on demand. We have a big episode for you tonight. We have a country newcomer that all the kids, like basically if you have a kid, you know they love Maddox Batson. He's everywhere on TikTok, Instagram, a huge deal. He came by the studio. Also, we had Tyler Nance, country newcomer, who's going out on tour as well. And we got a throwback interview coming up at the end of that as well. Thanks for checking out Taste of Country Nights on demand. All right, you ready to roll?
Come on, let's do it.
We got Maddox Batson in the house today. I want to talk about Fallin' Easy. I want to get right into it. Give me the entire story of the song and how it happened.
Absolutely. So Fallin' Easy, I was writing with some guys. Jackson Foote and Grant Averill, I've been writing with those guys for a few years now. My last two releases have actually been with them. Really great guys, super easy to write with. Wrote it last August. Relatively easy song to write. Didn't take too terribly long. And it's one of those ones where, in my life at that time and in that period of time of my life, I was kind of falling for, a specific someone, and it was just easy to write about because it was actually happening to me, right? Those are the easiest songs because you can take from real life. And, we're writing and they're like, "What's happening?" And I was like, "Man, I'm falling hard," but it's like, she makes it so easy, right? And okay. That's what we said first. And I was like, "Oh my God, this is the easiest song we're ever going to write." Okay. And it was, and it was just like, we cut all the vocals one day, right? Wow. All the vocals got released. We cut that day. I don't know. My voice just felt good. We went back to recut some of it and it just didn't feel the same.
Okay.
We cut it all that day. If we made any changes, it was very minimal, right? And it was just one of those songs. The second I got it back and the second they sent it to me, I knew, right? And that's the best feeling is when you know.
Yeah.
And I wanted to release it like the second I got it, right?
Right, right, right.
And that's always the case. But, we waited a little bit. And now, it's one of my best releases we've had and, probably in my last three or four. So really excited on how it's doing. It's still, climbing and still doing the great things.
Did the person at the time know it was about them?
Mm-mm. No, okay. I really don't think she does. Well, I'll let her know one of these days. If it goes number one, I'll call her and say, "Hey, I'll give you some residuals. You'll start getting checks in the mail." I didn't use your name, but I did talk about you. So
it is one specific.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What's the deal? What happened?
With me and her?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know. She's a really cool person, just kind of like, I don't know. This fizzled out. That's how it is. No bad blood or anything.
Okay.
If I ever got the opportunity to like let her know that I wrote the song about her, I'd let her know.
So we have to get this to number one just for that.
Yeah, just for number one. Yeah, call your radio stations just so I can do that. We can rekindle that. Yeah.
Do you write differently knowing that your audience first found you online?
A little bit. Really, what changes my writing is a lot like my age, right? And I have to realize my demographic is a lot younger than like the normal country demographic, so I can't sing about the normal stuff, right? I can barely sing about driving. I literally got my driver's license last week, right? So I can't sing about drinking. I can't sing about real heartbreak because I'm only 16 years old, right? How many of those can I really have? But I. What really changes my writing is, my core demographic and, fitting to them because I don't want to isolate them in any way. I don't want to talk about, taxes or, stuff that it's not applicable to them, right? I want to be relatable, right? So with my writing, I just want to relate to them the best I can. And I feel like I've done a pretty good job. And as I grow, hopefully they'll grow with me. And as I, start to mature and experience these more grown up things, hopefully they'll, do it with me and just grow with me. So.
And I saw you got a new truck.
I did.
How much influence did you have in purchasing that? Like deciding what to get? Did anybody give you any pushback?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My whole family, like my mom's side of the family, like my grandfather and all of them, they're all big GM people. And then my dad's like a big Ford guy. And then it's like you're kind of stuck. But really me, I'm not like a mechanic. I don't know too much about the trucks.
Sure.
I just know what they look like. Like I know what size the engine is and I know how fast it is, right? And that's really all I care about. I don't necessarily care, what the brand is. I ended up going with a GM and I couldn't be happier. I think it's absolutely sick and it's very quick, but don't tell my mom.
Okay, so she has no clue how fast it is?
No, I'm kidding.
Because those trucks are fast.
No, she rode in there with me. It's a V8, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's probably V8, got like 400.
It's a Black Widow, so it has it's like 470.
Yeah, you're roasting Corvettes out there.
Oh, come on. Well, I don't know about all that. Two-ton truck?
Well, no, listen, maybe. When I was 16... my car had 145 horsepower, and okay. I thought I was the man.
Oh, yeah.
It was 0 to 60 in like 12 seconds. You are on a whole new level.
Yeah.
So enjoy it, but be careful.
Absolutely.
Man.
Oh, I have to be careful. I don't even like going fast. Just keep that in there.
How do you decide what becomes a full song versus what stays a clip?
Oh, man. It's all feel, you know, and it's all feel. It depends on who you're with. Like, if I'm writing by myself, sometimes I'll just try to write hooks and then release those hooks out to people or, you know, record a hook and put it on, you know, Instagram or TikTok or anything like that. But if I'm in, like, a writing session, I mean, we're after a whole song. Sometimes we'll get two or three songs in the same day. And it's really just all feel. If you're kind of stuck, if it's not flowing super well, then... honestly, from my experience, which is not a lot, but you know what I have had experience with, if it takes too long, it's probably just not the right, it's not the right song, right? And it's not the right, maybe it's not the right people. Maybe it's just not the right vibe. Maybe it's not the right day, right? You come back to it, right? That's just from my experience. I could be completely wrong, but that's just what I've, you know, picked up. But you know, if it's quick, or if it's, you know, ideas are flowing, if we're bouncing stuff off of each other, and you know we're getting, or if it's by yourself and you're really feeling it, you're in the zone. That's how you know it's like, man, this could be something. And that's the way it was with Falling Easy. It was easy, right? And we were writing it, and these ideas were bouncing off of each other. And when we got those ideas, we were excited about it, you know.
Yeah.
And it just all came together super super quick. And that's the best part about songwriting is, you know, it could either take 2.5 weeks to write one song, or it can take 25 minutes, right? It really just depends on who you're with, how the ideas are, and how much, you know, caffeine you had that morning. You know, it's a variable, you know, it changes day to day.
What's your dream collaboration that we can get your fans to start tagging them to get you to do it?
John Mayer.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that's like completely, you know, we don't do the same music whatsoever. And
he's on Keith Laney. Urban's new record and Laney.
Yeah, I texted Laney. I was like, dude, you do realize that John Mayer is like my favorite artist of all time. She was like, yeah, he's absolutely unreal. And I was like, yeah, I bet, you know, wow. John Mayer. But, you know, he's my favorite artist I've ever, you know, I listen to him more than anybody. And I don't know, I feel like it's very common with musicians for John Mayer to be, it's like your favorite. Favorite artist, you know, it's just that's the way he is. You know, he's insanely talented musically, and I mean, if I ever got that opportunity, I'm sure I wouldn't, you know, turn it down.
Favorite John Mayer song? I can't be a deep cut because I know how you writers are.
Yeah.
It's got to be a hit.
Okay,
I'm gonna give you my. You already know.
Do you want me to give me my real, like, my favorite hit?
It's got to be a hit.
Okay, my favorite hit is either. Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, my favorite hit, I know this, like, of course, but it's Slow Dancing in a Burning Room. I think that's the best hit.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Personally, my real favorite John Mayer song is Edge of Desire. No one's, you know, that one. I know, real deep cut, I'm sorry. But I mean, I played that one at my shows. Like, I would play that like 2 years ago. Like, my first ever headlining gigs that I was doing, I would play Edge of Desire, just me and a guitar.
Wow.
No one would sing along. But, like, really funny story. I played the Brooklyn Bowl. I think it was December of 24, right? And I played the Brooklyn Bowl, and my aunt was there. It was my dad's sister, and she was there, and I played Edge of Desire that night, and I did not realize that was her wedding song.
Oh.
And she was, like, crying. And I was like, I was looking up at the balcony. I was like, why is my aunt crying while I'm singing this? But, like, it was her wedding song. And so it was, like, such a cool moment. Super random. But, yeah,
cool.
Edge of Desire is my favorite. Shout out to my... you know, old guitarist, his name was Jackson Anderson. He put me onto that song.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are text message conversations like with Laney?
You know, they're pretty normal, and they're, you know, I don't text her a whole lot. You know, I try not to bug her. You know, she's a very, very busy lady, and I, you know, I, I, I just try not to bug her too often. But, you know, with stuff like that comes around and, you know, she puts out a song with John Mayer, I just got to let her know.
How fast does she text you back?
I think she texted me back within like a few hours, right? I'm not expecting like immediate, but she did text me back within a few hours, which I respected. And iPhone.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, I no computer texting. Imagine I was sending her an email like, oh man, I love this song. She gets back, her management gets back at me like 2 weeks later.
Were you invited to the wedding?
Oh, man, I wish, man. Okay. I mean, dude, I'm ducking.
You would have rolled up?
Yo, absolutely.
In the truck?
Yeah. No, I mean, dude, maybe a limo just to, you know, put some attention on me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kidding, by the way. But super happy for him. Huge congratulations. Duck's an amazing guy. And Laney's even, no offense, Duck, but Laney's even better. You know, they're just two amazing people, and I could not be happier for them.
What can you not do anymore now that you're famous?
Oh, man. You know, there's a few things, and it's super weird, right? You know, I've been in, you know, I started getting like recognized when I go out places around, like I'd say like a year and a half ago, 2 years. So I'm relatively new to it, but it's strange, right? And it's, you know, you go places, you're like, you feel like everyone's watching you all the time, especially when you go places where like your demographic usually is. I go to a place every morning, and it's called Green Hills Nutrition. And it's
see
like,
ya.
Yeah,
not
you know,
go
like
anymore.
Yeah, you know, like those nutrition teas.
Yeah,
like they're super good. But I go there all the time, and like I go in there and like every time I'm just like, oh man, you know, like everyone knows, okay. It. And it's awesome, and I love it.
Right.
I wouldn't trade it for anything. Right? It's like the best part about my job is the fans. But there's a few things, and not necessarily that I can't do, but that is I have to be cautious. You know, when I go around, I can't just be acting a fool all the time.
Right.
Right? And I wouldn't do that anyway, but you know, I really can't now because there's eyes on me all the time.
Yeah.
And just wherever I go, I just have a lookout. And I feel like that just, I mean, maybe that just makes me a better person, you know? And that's the way I look at it. Since I have these eyes on me, I'll just, you know, straighten up a little bit. For a 16-year-old, that's hard to do, so.
I have a conspiracy that I don't think you're 16, man.
Really?
You interview like you're like 30, man.
That's a good compliment.
Dude, whoever
that's
raised this kid, I mean, dude, I'm shocked.
Thank you so much.
Like you're so well spoken.
I appreciate that.
Dude,
yeah.
Like I feel like, man.
I get it from both of my parents. My parents were public speakers, and I feel like I get it from them. They taught me how to like articulate myself.
Well, the knowledge that you carry is awesome.
Thank you.
I mean, if we're going to get into the woods, also like how no one can say like, oh, you're 16. What do you know? Because you circle back and cover that when you answer questions.
Thank you.
That's self-awareness.
Thank
my
you so
brother.
Much.
I love it. Okay. A couple more. Who have you gotten to meet that's like one of your heroes?
Oh man. So many. I met Vince Gill the other day at the Opry.
What was that like?
That was
at
awesome.
The Opry?
Yeah, it was a really cool experience. And he was there with a younger guitarist, which is really cool. My dad, he grew up in bluegrass music. And I just always idolized Vince Gill. You know, I mean, he's absolutely a stud. I think does he hold the record for like the most CMA awards or like most ACMs or
likely
something? He just wins
everything.
So many awards. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But I met him the other day. He's just such a cool dude. Fun fact, I'm going to air my dad out a little bit.
Let's
Not
go.
Air him out, but like it's a funny thing. My dad, he goes to breakfast every morning at the same place. Like he goes to eat same place after he works out or whatever. He'll go eat the same place. And the past few mornings, he's been seeing Vince Gill there. And it's just he'll sit in front of him. And he doesn't say anything to him. You know, he doesn't want to bother him. But he's like, I'm sitting beside Vince Gill.
What?
And I'm like, no way, dude. That's super cool. But yeah, it was like during CMA Fest. And he was like there with his, you know, people. And they were just, you know, just talking about CMA stuff.
That's
and my dad's just right in front of him. Just, you know, just eating his breakfast.
That's awesome.
And I was half a mind to tell Vince. I was like, yeah, my dad will see you tomorrow at breakfast. Yeah. but it's just a funny thing. I mean, he's not like stalking him or anything. It's just, you know, chance that they end up in the same spot. My dad's been eating there for, you know,
Vince Gill stalking your dad.
Yeah, probably. Probably. But yeah, I got to meet him. Met some really, really cool people. Post Malone's really cool. I met him a few years ago now. But had a really good conversation with him and his dad. Yeah. It was right when I was getting into this kind of stuff. So he talked to me about, you know, what to look for and how to sniff out the bad people. And, you know, he's been in it a long time. So he gave me some good advice for sure. He's really awesome. Honestly, a huge hero of mine when I was first getting into music was Wyatt Flores, and I was a huge fan of him. And I got to meet him relatively early on. I got to play Spotify House with him, 2024 CMA Fest. We played a song together, which was really cool, and it was just like a dream come true of mine because he was one of the first artists I ever, you know, naturally gravitated towards. You know, a lot of times in my life, whether it was piano or guitar or anything like that, it was almost not like my parents would force it on me, but they would, you know, suggest it, right? A lot of the stuff that I listened to and a lot of the stuff that, you know, I would, you know, want to play was, you know, introduced by either my sister or my parents, right? And Wyatt was one of the first people I ever, you know, naturally gravitated towards just by myself, right? I didn't need any other influence. He was just like, I was like, oh, this guy's absolutely sick.
Wow.
And, yeah, he's such a cool dude. Countless, you know, I've gotten to meet so many cool people, and it's just truly a blessing because you can learn so much from them. Like Lainey, you know, she's absolutely a hero of mine, and I got to go on tour with her and now learn so much from her, whether it's, you know, just one-on-one conversations or it's just, you know, just watching her, like watching her, you know, live and watching her, you know, deal with, you know, her crew or her band or anything like that and watching how she goes about things. You just learn so much from her. She's super experienced and, you know, just truly top of the game for sure.
Well, dude, thank you so much for coming by, man.
Absolutely.
That was awesome having you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. Yes, sir.
All right. Our next interview, we hung out with Tyler Nance. He played a song for us. I can't play more than like a second of the song or we'll get in trouble. So, but he played a song for us. It was awesome. And you hear the end of it and then we'll get into the interview.
He said,
that was awesome.
Thank you, brother.
We're here with Tyler Nance. Sorry, we have another so many Tylers have been in this week.
Good,
there's
man.
A lot of Tyler. Tell me about that song Keeps Me Sane, man. Tell me the story of it.
Man, I started writing it. I was just sitting on my couch. It was a weird week that week, and I just was sitting on my couch, and I was like, man, I feel like writing something, so typically I just pick up the guitar, so that's what I did, grabbed the guitar, and I just started strumming, and I started kind of just mumbling a melody, and kind of, that's where it all started, and I was playing this little riff that was, like, was going to be part of the song, and then it happened to not, but it was kind of the inspiration on how it started, and then later on, I think that week, I had a writing session with Brent McCullough and Donnie Napier, and I was like, "Hey, I got this really dumb idea, but what do you guys think about it?" And so they're like, "This is sick! Like, we love it." I'm like, "All right, let's run with it." So we ended up finishing it, and I teased it once, and it didn't do anything on social media, and then I teased it again, it went berserk on TikTok.
Isn't that so weird how that happened?
Yeah. And it's just was totally unpredictable for everybody, like my team, me, and just, you know, my whole family and everybody. They're like, oh my gosh, like, what's going on?
Right,
here?
Right.
Like I've seen stuff kind of go like viral, I guess, but I've never seen something of mine do what Keeps Me Sane did. So ever since then, I've just been rocking and rolling and just, you know, grinding every day and just trying to do the right things and keep on moving forward.
You told Taste of Country earlier in the year that Keeps Me Sane, it was talking, you know, mental health struggles and how it's been helpful to you. Has it been, since time has passed, has it been good medicine for you, or has it not been? Has it been the opposite? Sometimes, yep. You know, it can get crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's turned bad. I actually really eat it up, like singing it live, people knowing it, and you just have like a crowd of people singing back the chorus and just singing along. It's like, oh my gosh, like that's, I feel like that's like every artist's dream, is to be able to experience that. And I've been experiencing it, and it's like, and I love singing the song. It's fun. It's like, it's upbeat, and you know, and it's like huge whenever we play it live, and you know, like people appreciate it and, you know, say that it's helped them and in ways, and you know, that's means a lot to me too, that, to hear from listeners that, you know, my voice is getting them through tough times, you know?
So if somebody is going through something tough right now, where do you go to for positivity? Like, what would your advice be for that?
I listen, I use music as just listening to music as my, I guess my out a lot. So, that's what I do to kind of get out of my head or kind of just let everything go and kind of get my mind off of everything.
And since you've been in town, can you give me your best day in Nashville and your worst day?
Well, I don't think my best day in Nashville has happened yet. But it's coming. I think June 16th, whenever I debut at the Opry.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Yeah,
that's gonna be insane. I would say my worst day. You know, like before I wrote Keeps Me Sane, I had so many like self-doubts and stuff, and I was like questioning, I'm like, is anything gonna happen, you know? And that time kind of sucked, but you know, like, I think it's what makes people appreciate the like the good stuff, like what I'm going through now with the momentum of Keeps Me Sane and all of that, you know. But yeah, you know, it's every day's different, you know, but you know, some days are good, some days are bad.
Dude, where were you when you found out you were gonna play the Opry?
Oh, this is crazy too. I was on the Tracy Lawrence podcast, and he's been someone I've listened to growing up, and he invited me there on the podcast, and I was like, for one, he's like, who'd you listen to growing up? I'm like, well, you're one of the guys. I was like, how am I supposed to like act cool right now?
Yeah.
And then he asked me to play the Opry. So I was on the Tracy Lawrence podcast and Tracy Lawrence invited me to play the Opry. And
wow.
Yeah. Talk about that was a really good day too.
I bet.
Yeah. Have
you been to any Opry shows as a fan?
I went and toured it, back in October, and, I watched, Jake Worthington play there, and then I ended up leaving midway through because I had to leave. And
Did you go through the artist entrance?
Yeah.
Okay, so you went through the metal detector.
Yeah.
And did you get your? You didn't get your own dressing room that time, though, right?
Oh, we kind of had a room. You did? Like I was like, I
what
was
number?
Meeting. That I don't remember. It was like one of the ones closer to. I mean, it's all kind of like a.
I know. Isn't it?
I can't remember the room number, but
That's so cool, man.
Yeah, it was. It was insane.
What's going to be going through your head when you get in that circle?
I'm probably slightly freaking out. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie.
Is there a chance you might faint?
Nah, I might shed a tear. I don't know.
That's cool,
I
mean, man. That's cool.
I feel like that's a huge moment in an artist's career. And
yeah.
And I'm going to get to be a part of it. So. I'm super pumped.
You talk about Zach Bryan being one of your influences.
Yeah.
His songwriting and things like that.
That and Tyler Childers. And, yeah.
Sometimes he's in the news for the wrong reasons. Does that affect any of the way you feel about him?
You know, we're all human, you know. I don't think, you know, people make mistakes. I don't think that should, you know, make people hate another person, you know, but you know, I still enjoy his music, and you know, I think a good song is a good song, and everything else should be put aside if a song's good. It's good.
That's how I feel too. Yeah. I agree with you.
I try not to like get into the drama.
The music is music. Yeah. It's art. Let it be.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're going on tour though with Gavin Adcock.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the fence, dude. Fence. Or what are you gonna do? What are you gonna say? Are you in? Like, do you have to take sides? I mean,
I don't think you have to take sides. I think you know, like, you know. They're their own people. They have their own opinions on each other. And then, you know, my relationship with one and my relationship with the other, it can stay, and, you know, it could stay fine. It could be a good relationship.
You know? Are you going to talk about the fence?
Probably not. You know, I don't think there's any reason to, you know. But, no, I think that tour is going to be really fun, you know.
Yeah,
I think
dude.
Our, like, my audience and his audience can really go with one another.
Yeah, that's going to be big for you, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm super pumped for it.
Darius Rucker is going to be at the Opry. Yes, sir. Have you got to meet him?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay, that'll be cool. That'll be cool.
I hope to. That'd be really cool.
Who are you bringing with you when you debut?
I'm going to probably have my mom and dad and probably my best friend. That's probably... And then I know a ton of my family's going to be coming to it.
Dude, that's crazy.
They're all super excited. There's probably, there's a lot of them that are coming.
It should be. That's good.
I mean, they're like, it's far away, but we're making it. I'm like, you guys don't have to. They're like, no, we're making it. It's like, all right. Thank you guys. I love you guys. But yeah, my family's been a large, like a huge part of, me carrying on, staying,
keeps you sane, man. I don't know.
But so
have you part of your story, if people don't know, is when you wanted to get to Nashville, you got as close as you could, which was in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And it was like a 60-minute and 90-minute drive. Are you any closer now to Nashville?
Yeah, I'm in the Herm now.
Okay.
I was in my camper. I lived in it for like almost 3 years working on the road welding, and I pulled it out to I almost stayed in a KOA, which is campers.
Yeah, those are sweet.
But they're like super expensive, and I didn't like have the funds to quite do that. So I was like, I'm just gonna go across the border and just live there, paid like $700 a month, and then the next year I ended up making the move into Antioch, and then I moved to Hermitage just this year. So
wow, the progression is there.
Yeah, Hermitage is nice because you got the airport, and it's like not directly in the heart of Nashville, and it's a nice area.
Do you, as a former welder, walk around and look at all the welds and judge them?
Sometimes I'm like, oh, man, I'm trying to think. I did this yesterday. I was at Odie's, and I was looking at in the bathroom. They have like the metal. I was like, what is this, man? What is this? But yeah.
So whoever, that's Old Dominion's place. So we got to find out who did the welding on what door is it?
Yeah. No, it was all the welding, man.
Welding.
Hey, to be fair, for where it is and what it's doing, it gets the job done.
Yeah, yeah. What happens if you weld without that big ass mask on?
You'll burn your eyes and like you. Basically, it's like a sunburn on your eyes, and your eyes will be like. Will be peeling. They call it arc flash, and or arc burn.
You ever got arc burn?
Oh yeah, oh. I've gotten metal in my eyes. I've had that happen. And
dude,
and I did that, and you just wake up in the middle of the night, and your eyes would just be like feel like they have sand in them, and it sucks. It's not a fun experience because you can't sleep.
Okay. I thought they just put that mask on to look cool, but it actually means something.
Yeah.
Okay. You toured with Justin Moore?
I played a show with Justin Moore out in Kentucky.
What was that like?
That was super cool because, again, like
Justin Moore,
he's got so many huge songs that, I've heard growing up in my childhood. And yeah.
Do they get weird when you say that to them? Do they feel old?
I don't know. I didn't really talk to him that much, but okay, I did shake his hand and be like, hey, man, I love your music, and I appreciate your music. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, man.
What's coming up next for you? I know you're touring with Gavin Adcock, but musically, like, what are you working on?
Man, I'm going to just keep on cranking out songs and hopefully this year start working on more music, we've been in the works of that. I've got so many songs that I have written, and it's like, I'm like, guys, I want to put them out.
You're ready.
I'm chomping at the bit to
awesome.
Put out songs, but there's a way to it, and you can't get too ahead of yourself. So, but no, I believe we'll be definitely putting out more music this year. I have a feeling. So I'm super, super excited because I feel like this, these next songs that I've written and whatnot, they're a lot, they're not way better. You know, all like, I feel like a lot of my songs are good. Some of them I'm not the happiest or proudest of, and some of them I am. And I'm pretty sure that these songs that I will be putting out are dang good. So.
That's awesome, yeah, man. We're pumped for you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you for coming by. Thank you for playing for us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And, yeah, thank you, man.
That's awesome. Appreciate it. Now, a throwback Terry Clark interview from 2024. Evan Paul here. We're hanging out with Terry Clark. What's happening?
Oh, very little. How are you doing, Evan?
I'm doing good. Very little.
I just got up. You got me up early today.
Hey, but you got a whole album coming out. A lot going on. Yeah. I want to get into it. What inspired you to kind of retoy and retool all these?
Well, you know, these songs have been a part of my life for a very, very long time. And you know, it was just, it felt like a really cool idea to go back in, and it's nothing super original. Like Brooks and Dunn have done this, and Tracy Lawrence has done it, but kind of going in and updating these songs that have become staples in my show, and that my fans have been coming and listening to this certain way for so long. And also for me and my band, I've had the same band members for a long time, and freshening them up and giving them a bit of a new life gives us a different way to play them live without losing the integrity of the original recording. I didn't, you know, go and completely paint a mustache on the Mona Lisa or anything like that. But
when you guys get into the studio and all the guitar players and drummers and everybody get in and they hear their isolated parts from years back, is anyone like, man, I've gotten so much better? Or like,
well, they're not the same band that played on the original recordings. Like a lot of the guys in the band were, you know, they were teenagers when we did the original recordings, but, okay. So the studio musicians I used on this round were not the same studio musicians I used, back in 1995, 96, 97, whatever. So they were able to put their own spin on it too, creatively, which was really nice. And Adam Schoenfeld, who was the band leader, is a guitar player who plays on so many of today's big hits. And he's in Tim McGraw's band, and he played with Jason Aldean, and so he's somebody who really has his pulse on what's going on. But he loved the original recording so much, too. We struggled with a couple of them, like, God, you know, I don't know that we need to change this lick. It's just such an iconic lick, you know. But so we don't know how much to push it, how much to keep it the same. But I think the songs that are the most different are probably If I Were You and I Just Want to Be Mad, you know, the Cody Johnson and Kelly Clarkson duets. But those, you know, they just lent themselves to a bit of a different treatment.
So that's like kind of sonically or what have you. What songs mean something different to you today than they did back then?
Oh, gosh. I'll tell you what. I don't know that they mean something different because the song is written and that's the attitude. I think that, you know, when you sing a song that has a certain spin on it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, you start to kind of stop thinking about what it means. And you almost are just singing the song without really connecting that lyric with a person sitting in the front row. You sort of, it's not like you check out, but you've sung it so many times, it's just hitting the notes. This brought me back to what these songs were about in the first place. And Better Things to Do is about, I'm not going to waste my time crying over you. And just really digging into the lyric again. And it just reintroduced me to the lyrics of these songs and what they mean to people and what they could mean to people hearing them for the first time. And I'm now singing them like I sang them for the first time and haven't done them thousands of times. So it's been a really nice freshen up reboot for me, so to speak.
And you have like all the contemporary hit makers on it now. Who were you rolling with back in the day?
Oh, gosh. Who was I rolling with? Yeah, who was I touring with? Well,
like when you were a new and upcoming artist in country music, like who are you friends with?
Oh, Reba. And she's still a friend to this day. You know, I met her for the first time. I think it was at Fanfare, you know, CMA Fest now back in, I want to say my first or second CMA Fest. And she actually handed me a gold record for my first album. And I sold her cowboy boots before I ever got a record deal. She walked into the store I was a sales girl at. I was in her fan club when I was a teenager. So she's been a very consistent part of my life since before she knew I even existed.
Wow.
Her and the Judds were probably my two biggest influences musically as a teenager. And just, you know, having these women's number in my phone still blows me away that I can send a text to either Winona or Reba. It's crazy to me.
Still?
It's
really?
Crazy. Wow. But yeah, Reba, you know, and I got to tour with Brooks and Dunn, and those guys have always been so awesome. Every time I see them, it's just smiles and great memories. You know, I didn't get to know George Strait really well because he was flying in and out for the tour that I did with him. But anytime I've ever seen him, he's just so friendly. And I just, you know, I of course became friends with Clay Walker and Tracy Lawrence and all those guys that were having hits right around the time when my singles were going up to the top of the charts, and Mark Chestnut and that class of, you know, the late great Joe Diffie and Toby, and like that was my class, you know, of the 90s, and the artists that were out doing the radio rounds. And at the time, Blake Shelton, before he was a household name, you know, he came out in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I remember battling him for number one between Girls Like Two and Austin. We were both doing radio round robins to try and get our spins up. And wow. I was duking it out with Blake Shelton for that number one spot at the time. So there's just so many great memories with so many artists.
Okay, yeah, I have a lot to hold on. A lot of follow ups here. What can you give me any Blake's stories?
Oh, I got a great one.
Early Blake. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, early Blake. Mullet Blake.
Yeah.
My best Blake story was CMA Fest, then Fan Fair at the fairgrounds, and it's more of a story that he should tell because it's pretty funny. But he was getting out of a car and getting into a golf cart to go sign, and there were a bunch of fans behind him. All they could see was behind him.
The mullet.
And they're going, Terry! Hey, Terry! I'm like, this is really bad for me. And really bad for him. Like, seriously. People saw me as, like, I look like a football player with a mullet? What the hell, man? What is wrong with this?
That's hilarious.
And then he immediately cut his hair.
Really? That's the reason?
He tells a story. Like, that might be one of the reasons why he cut his hair.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't want to be mistaken for a chick, man.
So that one moment essentially changed country music. Because, I mean, the mullet, when he lost the mullet, was a big deal.
I take it as a compliment. He has a better ass than me.
What about do you tour with Toby?
Oh God, yeah. Okay. I did the whole Throwdown tour in 2000. Gosh, what year was it? 2003, I think. 2004, and we just had so much. The reason I'm blanking is because we also drank a lot. Toby had some epic parties on his bus after shows, and Brian O'Connell, our promoter for those shows at the time, who's still a very good friend, would DJ with his computer. He'd have all the tunes going, and that bus was just up, and we'd start rocking, you know? And Toby and I spent a lot of time together on that tour, just hanging out after shows and chewing the fat, talking. I got advice from him. We had some funny, very funny moments. We shared a few dips and a few whiskeys, and I absolutely love the man. I appreciated his just his sense of individuality and who he was and his authenticity and his songwriting. I mean, gosh, you know, there are a lot of good singers out there, and Toby was a good singer and a great singer, but not everybody can write a song like that that just appeals to the masses. And he like got into his audience's head and knew what they wanted to hear, and I think he just wrote from his heart. And when you do that, we all have a heart. We all can relate. And he's so missed. And it makes me really sad. I'm not ever going to see him again in this lifetime. But I think we'll all see each other again.
Yeah.
That'll be a hell of a band.
Yeah.
Right?
He's already up there rocking.
No, I know it.
You were surrounded by a lot of guys in country music then. Now there's a lot of women and a lot of camaraderie within the mm-hmm. women. Was there any camaraderie with the women that were around when you were?
I think there was camaraderie, but I think it felt almost like, I'm sure there's competitiveness going on today with the new, you know, a sense of competing with yourself more than anything. But I find there's, because there was such a stale point at radio for women in country music for a long time, there and it's still not even mm-hmm. by any sense. I think there's a more of a we got to stick togetherness now than there was in the 90s when everybody was getting airplay. I mean, all the women who were making great records were getting airplay, and there just doesn't seem to be as much room for every woman now. And for whatever reason, I think that has actually brought everybody closer together. Like I sense a real sisterhood of women supporting women now that, not that we didn't have that then, but it feels much stronger now.
Well, was there anyone that looking back on your career, was there anyone that you were like, man, I was too overly competitive. I know you mentioned the Blake Shelton Austin thing, but like, female wise, was there anyone that you were like, man, I was just too overly competitive with Shania and I shouldn't have done that? Or
are we allowed to swear on this show?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh yeah. No, Shania and I were so, it was apples and oranges. We were on the same label. If anything, she probably helped my career because they were probably able to leverage her to help me get some stuff. But, Shania was Canadian. She was on the same label. The place where I felt her the most was probably at a Canadian awards shows.
Okay.
I was like, oh my God, of course. She's got to be Canadian. And Paul Brandt comes up to me one day and he goes, I'm so sorry, Terry. It's like if Garth Brooks were Canadian, I'd be screwed. So I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm going up against the 800-pound gorilla who happens to be Canadian. But no, I'm so proud of her success. And she's on another stratosphere. She's like a Taylor Swift type of fame. You know, you can't compare with that. But yeah, to be really honest, it was like I kind of felt like I was just doing my own thing for the longest time. We all compete for radio airplay at that time. You know, we're all competing. I just worked so much. I think my agent at William Morris told me one time, he said, you are probably the hardest working girl on our roster. And they have a big roster. And I worked a lot of dates for a lot of years. I opened a lot of tours. I was definitely the opening act for a lot of really great tours, which helped me get in front of big audiences and hone, you know, entertaining people. But I remember hearing Redneck Woman for the first time and I went, oh, shit.
Here we go. Yeah.
That one kind of got me a little bit. I'm like, damn it.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, what a hit, though. I love huge, Gretchen. Yeah. I'm really happy for her. But yeah, that was kind of a whoo. Wow, I better strap on my seatbelt. Here she comes.
Interesting. I get a kick out of like when I'm listening back to something like the Donahue reference and Better Things to Do. Are there lyrics like that in your catalog that'll really put fans back into the 90s and early 2000s?
You know, I toyed with changing that when we re-recorded it with Ashley McBride. But I thought, you know, if we change the lyrics to these songs, I know we're updating the tracks and making freshing them up, but I do change it live. Instead of Donahue, I say I'd rather watch YouTube. But
okay,
who knows when YouTube's going to be out of style. So and I feel like it's kind of our job to educate people. I had a 23-year-old guitar tech working with me for a while, and the first show she did with us, she asked me after the show, she said, she goes, sir, she used to call me sir. She's, what is a Donahue?
Really? Are you serious?
Yeah. She also asked what a bordello was, too, at one point. So we had to explain a few things to her.
Okay. Wow. They're not doing good for the youngins.
No. So I figured, you know, leaving Donahue in there, if it raises the question, somebody will Google Donahue and find out who he is. But
right.
We left that kind of. It's pop culture of the 90s and 80s. And like, yeah. So we just left it alone.
Now, how do you get Kelly Clarkson on a project like this? She's really busy. Do you guys go way back?
She's very busy. it was a small miracle to get Kelly because we go back to about 10 years. She hosted a birthday party for a mutual friend and at her house, and I got invited to it. And he just celebrated his 50th, actually, which is exactly 10 years later. And I met her there and just found her so authentic and genuine and sweet. And she was actually pregnant at the time. And then, you know, fast forward to today, and I don't ever remember exchanging numbers with her or anything like that. But I get this really random, weird text come up on my phone that said, do you think we should go to the stop here before we go to the airport or go to see the whatever? I was like, who is this? And I didn't recognize the number. And then I said, who is this? And she went, Trisha? Is this Trisha? And I went, no, this is not Trisha. And she said, who is this? And I said, I'm like, oh my God, who's got my number, right? So we go back and forth like this. And she said, oh my God, is this Terry Clark? And I said, I'm driving right now. I will text you back when I get where I'm going. I put her off. I said I was driving. You know, that auto text thing? Meanwhile, she's dropping hints that she's Kelly Clarkson, but not telling me she's Kelly Clarkson. She's sending me photos of her betting line. And I'm just like...
Wow.
So then she says, well, one time when you were hosting a radio show, I started singing your song to you over the phone, but it was actually Patti Loveless. It wasn't you. And I'm like, okay, this has got to be Kelly. Like, this is the only person I thought it could be. So then I texted Reba and I said, is this Kelly Clarkson's phone number?
Jeez.
So I'm texting Reba about Kelly Clarkson, texting me about impersonating Patti Loveless. It's just all just a bizarre happenstance. So anyway, we finally figured out that we were talking to the person we thought we might be talking to, because we were both afraid to say who we were in case some, you know, lunatic got a hold of the phone number. And so I'm like, while I have you, I'm doing this project. And I had, honest to God, I swear on everything I know, I had talked to my managers about trying to ask her to do a song on this like 2 weeks prior to this happening.
Wow.
So it seemed like it was meant to be.
Yeah.
Because she loves 90s country women, especially. She's talked about that publicly.
What a story. What a story. Did the Cody Johnson record, did he choose that or did you give him that one?
Well, we talked about three different choices. Okay. And that was the one I actually thought originally would make the best duet because of the conversational aspect of the lyric. But we kind of went around the long way around, and he came back to that when he said, I've really listened to this, and I think this is the one we should do. And he wasn't there for tracking, so we went in to track the song, and, you know, we just came up with a completely different treatment that sounded more Cody, and it toughened up and it slowed down. And the duet, I mean, it turned into an actual conversation between two people in a relationship that is so real and so everyday life. He told me the other day, he said, I've listened to that track about 1,000 times.
Wow.
He said, when me and Mandy get in a fight, I play it for Brandy. Sorry. Get in a fight. I play it for her. We laugh. So, yeah. So it is very relatable, and it may be my favorite one out of all of these just because it is such a new take on this song, and our voices sound so great together. And I love who he is, and I respect, he's kind of like, you know, the lifestyle of George Strait and the song sense of Tim McGraw, and his voice is just unbelievable. Just such a great singer that you just, you roll that all into one and you get Cody Johnson. He's amazing.
Yeah, he'll never get a manicure or pedicure. I've asked him that.
No, yeah. I don't see that. There's no man in manicure.
Yeah, right. You also work with Lainey. Do you see like a young Terry Clark and Lainey? Like
she's just her own person, and absolutely. Like she's, you know, when I came out in 1995, I looked at all the women and what they were doing, and I just did something completely else, different. I'm like, I'm going to do it. I see what everybody's doing right now, so I'm gonna do the opposite. And the guys were all wearing cowboy hats and starched Wranglers, and I was comfortable in that, just being from Alberta and selling Western apparel for a living. And Lainey, you know, grew up farming and ranching and all of that stuff. I didn't, but I love that she's just created her own brand and image from the get-go. And, you know, I see a lot of women wearing cowboy hats now. So, you know, if I was coming out now, I probably wouldn't, just because everybody else is.
Well, it's interesting because that's what she said. She thinks is part of her success is that she just did exactly what you said. She studied what all the women were doing and then did the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. And bell bottoms, you know, she's got a couple things going on. She doesn't wear, you know, the same hat all the time.
Yeah.
It's not always like a cattleman's crease cowboy hat or Texas style hat, but she definitely has her own thing going on and is so successful. And I got to tell you, when she pulled up to do this session, she showed up without a manager, without an entourage. She pulled up in the biggest, highest pickup truck I've ever seen, and she tried to park the thing. And the ass end of this truck is hanging right out in the middle of the road. And I'm just like, we're directing her to get as close as possible to the curb. She needed a ladder to get out of the thing, but she was so genuinely sweet. Just pulled up by herself. All right, let's go to work.
Wow.
And yeah, I just knew she was the real deal right off the bat.
Wow. Who would you say didn't get a fair shake looking back? What country artist didn't get a fair shake at everything? Could have been a bigger star.
Oh my gosh, that's a loaded question. Who didn't get a fair shake? I'm trying to get my, because I think everybody's done really well. Are you talking about like the 90s artists?
Yeah.
Let me see. God, that's a trick question. You should have given me more notice with that one.
We'll come back to it.
Come back to that one.
Yeah. Would you ever cash in and sell your catalog? A lot of people are doing that.
I don't know. It would depend on the number, I guess.
Okay.
You know, I'd have to see what I'm making every year with in my, you know, royalty statements and weigh that out with the big number at the end of the day. Would that make any difference? You know, luckily, I think that all of us in the 90s are experiencing a resurgence of that era of country music. And I think we're going out and we're getting a little bit more than we did 10 years ago, even for shows, for touring and festivals and things like that. So, you know, I think everybody's getting a bit of a second shot at banking some money for retirement and going in and, you know, and I think that's really, really great. And the artists that are going out and doing that may not have to do something like that. So, I know I love it too. I think it's a bit, and back to your question about a fair shake. I think that there was a period of time where 90s acts sort of not getting forgotten, but sort of when something becomes cool again, people just start jumping on the bandwagon, and it's not like we're going to get number one hits on the radio anymore, but more of the younger generation are looking into it. And they're like, you know, when they see somebody like me and Lainey or me and Cody or me and Ashley doing a song and they're a fan of theirs and they were like, who the hell is that? Then they go and they'll look it up and they'll dig into the deeper cuts in the catalog and go, I like that.
You know? I mean, in all honesty, it's cool that you did this for you, but it's really cool for country music. Like, it's a really good bridge for country music, bring in the new artists and the 90s. And I think it's going to be really successful. I'm glad you did this. This is really cool.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun and I'm glad I did it too. And it's fun to be able to talk about some new stuff, but also, you know, with the classic spin and, you know, honoring the past and bringing it into the future a little bit.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Ed. All right. We're going to bring in Billy Dukes from tasteofcountry.com. Let's talk about what's going on in country music this week, because there was a lot of interesting stuff on our website as far as news is concerned.
Yeah, it was a real potpourri of country music news, but I thought the Garth Brooks tour was probably the biggest story. Only two dates right now, two Indianapolis dates, but we've kind of been through this before where Garth is the kind of artist who likes to announce shows sort of one at a time so that every city it's like a big major event and gets everybody's media attention.
Okay, I have a couple questions that I would like to ask. I guess I'm going to ask you. Because you're the guy. You're the guy I want to ask just because you know a lot about country music. And basically, I've known you long enough that, you know, we could talk about this. Okay. So on our Taste of Country Facebook, we, you know, posted a lot of stuff about Garth Brooks. Because, yeah, he's going on tour. And if you read through the comments, it's crazy to me the people that believe the theory that are writing, where's the bodies?
I don't understand
why people are, I know why they are, but I don't understand why he's getting so much flack on that. And like, people are saying that his career is done and no one's going to go. Like, where is all this coming from?
Two separate sources. The where is the bodies thing is like its own ecosystem. Like, that has a real specific origin point. I don't know what it is, but someone has this idea that Garth Brooks, part of his success is because he's somehow pulling the strings in an almost cartel-like fashion or strong-arming people into playing his songs. For the record, I've been playing Garth Brooks music and that kind of thing since 2003. I was working at a radio station when he had his 2007 comeback on the heels of More Than the Memory. I mean, there was a lot of pressure to play that song, but it wasn't nothing that was like illegal or shady or anything. It was just his record label up calling me, being like, hey, can you play this song? You got to play this song. Can you play this, put this song in heavy rotation, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but what about the where's the bodies theory?
I don't know the origin of that. Like, someone came up with it and just sort of caught on, and it's what people who maybe don't believe what Garth Brooks is selling have sort of latched onto as sort of their ha-ha joking sort of...
Do you believe it? I mean, the facts are there that, right? Am I wrong? Are the facts there that when he performed, like, every city... Basically, I want to let people know what the theory is.
Tell me the theory, because I don't know what these facts are. Go ahead.
Okay. Apparently, people think that the facts that line up are that there were murders in cities that Garth Brooks was playing in that night. And if you look at all of his concerts... Basically, all of his concerts, there is always a murder in that city on that day, almost always, I guess.
That's absurd. Like, but beyond that, like, how do you, like, he plays in big cities, right?
Like, in the areas, I guess. So people are basically saying, you know, the theory is that he'll go... You know, park the bus, and hang out during the day. But he goes out and does this deal and then goes back and no one suspects that it would be him.
No.
And that's why everybody's like, where's
that's
the
absurd.
Body?
All right. So let's reverse engineer that a little bit. Right. So like, let's say he plays Nashville. I'm looking here that in 2026, there's been about 24 murders in Nashville. So that gives 50 for a year. So one out of every 7 dates on average, there's a Nashville. But if someone wanted to bang the drum on that theory, they could say, oh, well, there was a murder in Murfreesboro on this day, and really kind of expand it out geographically to kind of work their theory. He plays in big cities. There's murders in a big city or the town surrounding a big city probably every day of the year. Or most days of the year. You could say that about any artist. Like, give me another connection. Like, Garth Brooks can't just walk around in public and not be seen. That's a silly that's a silly thing. Is that where the origin point for all that is? Is like someone like did some math about
yes.
That's stupid. People
but
need
look,
come
on. Everything we've posted gets like, it's not just one person. There's like hundreds of people are commenting, where's the bodies, Garth? And I'm like,
so,
dude.
I think part of the reason why people have sort of glommed on to this particular narrative, for lack of a better word, is because to go along with that, people have thought that Garth has gotten political or made his political leanings known. Specifically when he played, I believe it was Joe Biden. Didn't he play President Joe Biden's inauguration?
Oh, okay.
In 2021.
Okay. That makes sense, because I also saw a lot of comments that said woke and lost a fan. And I'm like, dude, what happened?
That was from the Biden. And before that, I think maybe people believed he was more liberally minded. I think, honestly, he's played for presidents of both political parties. That's probably what he would tell you. I don't know that you could really pin down his politics with any sort of evidence. But that's, you know, so people have taken that sort of political anger and maybe seen this other kind of joke about where's the bodies, put them together, and that's kind of built momentum up for that. So that's kind of where all the Garth Brooks hate comes from, if it's going to be there. But
wow.
I don't think it's gonna affect his concerts. Like, I think his concerts are still normal. People who are fans are still gonna go. I don't know that he actually lost that many fans.
So like, he sells out. These are just Facebook trolls. Like, he still sells out. He's still Garth Brooks out there.
100%. Like, it's been a few years since he did concerts, but he finished a stadium tour, right? And those all sold out. The price point is fair. $150 to see Garth Brooks is a fair price point. You know, I don't, and like, you know, he tends to only come to a city once every 10 or 15 years. So, like, there's urgency. And he's also really, really good at marketing. Like, he's a marketing major. Like, let's not forget that. Like, he's really good at that part of the job.
All right, let's, I want to also talk about, Megan Maroney did an interview where she was speaking about some of her outfits weigh between 10 and 15 pounds. And I was like, holy crap. Like, you don't think about that, but I guess, where's the 15 pounds of outfit?
That is a significant amount of weight because she's not out there wearing like tactical gear. You know what I mean? She's generally wearing some sort of dress. I guess it's just often it has like some rhinestone or similar bedazzled studding. So that probably adds the weight to that. But that, is that counting boots?
I don't know. No, I don't think so. Because she said to prepare for tour, she wears a 10-pound weighted vest and sings because her outfits, some of them weigh 10 to 15 pounds, and she has to be, like, basically before she play, you know, she did that a couple times without training with the vest, and she was, like, really out of breath, and she's like, oh, man, it's because my clothes weigh so much, so now she trains with a vest, a weighted vest.
Well, it's really hard to run around a stage and sing. Like, the artists who do that, like, you got to give them props, because it does... especially when it's 90 degrees out. What's an average outfit, though, right? Like, if you're just wearing jeans, a button-down shirt, boots, and hat, like, what is that?
2 pounds.
Like, you think that's it?
Yeah, I mean, I am a shoe collector, and I wear a size 15, and when they mail it to me, the package always is, like, 2 pounds.
Okay. All right, so it's a significant... I don't know what she's got on. 15 pounds seems like an awful lot for someone who is just more or less wearing a dress. I found that surprising, too. But the struggle is real, and I do appreciate her being honest about that. I thought that interview that she did, I thought it was pretty genuine. Kind of talked about some things maybe that she hadn't talked about previously. So I appreciated that. But, you know, Kenny Chesney's an artist. Obviously, he's not wearing a 15-pound outfit, but he's talked an awful lot about how, you know, his workout and his aerobic regimen just to stay in shape to be able to do shows like he does, which involve a lot of running around and singing. And not, it's not easy. It's not easy.
Yeah, not easy.
I'll give you an... we talked about this a little bit last week when I saw Post Malone a couple earlier this month. I thought the heat and the everything was getting to him. I didn't think he was in shape to do his... the kind of show he wanted to do because he was
well,
off
he smokes
and just
7 packs, 8 packs of cigarettes
that's
a
it.
Day. I mean,
that's
he's got cigarettes stuck in his mouth.
Yeah, and you can tell. Like, it's a different level of exertion than, like, when you see Kenny Chesney doing a show like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's living his life. Like, he's living his best life. I mean, he's, you know, the old school days, like when my dad would walk into the gas station and get a carton of cigarettes, you know, let's roll.
Was your dad a smoker? What was your dad's brand?
Marlboro Light 100 soft pack.
My dad smoked Salems, which I think are menthols, which is really odd.
Okay.
He's like I don't know. I didn't know a lot of men who smoked Salems and or menthols in my life, I guess. But do you remember, like, your dad ever come home with, like, the toys? Like, sometimes there's these little marketing things, like the cigarette companies would make these toys and games that they'd include with the carton purchase.
I just remember my dad having Marlboro Miles, and we had, like, luggage and a suede jacket.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the same kind of thing. Like, I remember this one game, it was like a little water type game where you had this little disc and like you had to try to float all the little cigarettes into the cigarette pack. And I would spend hours with that thing as a kid. You know, it's just a wild time to think about.
That's crazy. I wonder if you could get one on eBay. That's crazy. Oh, man. All right. Hey, one more thing here before we head out. Kane Brown made a comment where, I don't know, I feel like, basically Kane Brown said he doesn't really have any friends in the music industry, and that, you know, a lot of his friends are in, you know, he has more friends in sports than he does in music, and he's never really felt embraced. What do you think about that?
Well, he named a few people he is friends with. I feel like I understand his general, what he's trying to say, that he's an outsider, so to speak, and that's a product of where he comes from. I don't think he's necessarily the most extroverted guy, so like he might feel a little uncomfortable in these big sort of situations where he's surrounded by stars and superstars who are really outgoing. But there are other artists like that. Like, I think Walker Hayes has been someone who kind of lives outside that bubble pretty successfully. Alan Jackson's a really good example. Like, I don't know that Alan Jackson really embraced sort of everybody that was his contemporary.
Justin Moore? There was any.
Yeah, I think not. Yeah, since he's moved back to Arkansas, you could probably put him in that regard. But I think to a certain degree, like, everybody thinks that about themselves. Like, they don't feel like they're part of, like, the insiderdom when really they probably are a lot more than they realize. Because Kane, the names he ticked off, he's like, oh, yeah, well, I do text with Morgan Wallen a lot. And Chris Young, I'm good buddies with him. He's obviously good friends with Jason Aldean.
Yeah.
You know, there's three really big artists. That, like, so who is he not friends with? He's not friends with, who's he not naming? Jelly Roll. But I don't know that he's not friends with Jelly Roll. Like, I feel right. Like Jelly Roll would be cool with him, right?
Yeah, like I almost think that he meant it more in the sense of, you know, the music industry in general, I think, not just artists. Like, you know, like there's hundreds of people that are in the music, thousands of people in the music industry, you know, three of his friends compared to 1,000. Is yeah. Safe to say that he doesn't really have any friends. I mean, he could have said, I have three, but that's just what he said.
I think it has always been weird to me how Kane Brown has been just sort of just outside what we think of as a superstar, because his success with music and his success touring, like, that says superstar. That says Entertainer of the Year nominations to me. But he doesn't get those big nominations for whatever reason. Like, he has very, very few nominations in general, let alone wins. I don't think he made his Grand Ole Opry debut until just like a few years ago, which is really odd. I can't put my finger on why that is, but he's sort of either by choice or by force or just some combination of the two, just outside of like this sort of the walls of the high school.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. You're right. I just don't understand why he is not more. He's more mainstream than country acceptance wise. I think that like my mom knows who Kane Brown is, but doesn't know who Chris Young is. You know, those are examples. You know, so like, I think people outside of country like recognize that he's Kane Brown.
I don't think he's up. When he mentioned that, not having a lot of friends, I'm not sure that he was upset by it necessarily. Like, I didn't get a sense that he was longing for friends.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, good. I don't know anything about what he said other than what I saw on paper. So that's good. Kane. I love Kane Brown, by the way. I mean, like, he is such a nice guy, fun to interview. You know, he's low energy, and he'll admit that, you know, but it's like fun. You know, he's a good dude. He's got a lot going on, and he's got kids. You know, it's good to talk to him about dad stuff. And the one thing with Kane Brown is anytime I've interviewed him, he's always positive. And that's a great characteristic to, you know, to being a good dad, I think, too, is, you know, so I don't, yeah, you know, he's got a lot going on, but he lives in the Nashville area. So why is he somewhat of an outsider? I understand what you're saying.
Kane, by the way, talked to the Pivot podcast about all of this. I don't know what the Pivot podcast is all about, but
they
like
pivot.
To give credit.
Yeah. I bet they pivot like from different topics. That would be my guess.
Sure, sure. Thank
you. All right, well, let's pivot on out of here. Coming up next week, we have Joe Nichols is going to be on with us. And we already did the interview already. And the guy is one of the best storytellers that has ever sat in here. Like, he tells in-depth stories, and they're funny, and there's no holding back. And even as people were like, well, you know, I don't know. And he's like, no, I meant that, you know, like, right? Like, he doubled down.
Yeah, I really enjoyed him.
Yeah, he's the good man. I can't wait for y'all to hear that. We'll get that up there next week on Taste of Country Nights On Demand.